Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
If it brings her to the same point that it brings you, it doesn't matter whether she called it God along the way or not.
That understanding works for you, so therefore it is absolutely right for you.
All beliefs have become only relatively true, and of course to the world, religion is just some personalized experience, not a divine revelation, and the church is catching the disease.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Current, this is Wretched Radio, bringing you the latest in celebrity news and entertainment, and slapping a Bible verse on it so we can call it Christian radio. At least that's what the other talk shows do. This is Wretched Radio, hopefully doing a little more than that. Kind of a sad story about Charles Schulz. The movie is out. It's doing pretty well at the box office. I don't know if you've seen it or not. I haven't. No plans. That doesn't mean anything. But there's a brand new book out by a Stephen J. Lynn, who's written a book called A Charlie Brown Religion. It is about the life and faith of Charles Schulz. It doesn't get into any other issues, just basically focuses on his faith, which I think is that James Dobson started that up, didn't he? Focus on faith out there in Colorado?
Focus on the family. Close.
Ah. Schulz was raised in a family that put little stock in religion. As a young adult, he came into contact with members of a Church of God in the lovely state of Minnesota. And we all know the state of Minnesota, what their state photograph is, don't we? That's right. Grace. Eventually professed faith in Jesus Christ. Quote, he was fully committed to his spiritual beliefs, having developed what others in the church might describe as a personal relationship with God through his faith in Christ. But, supposedly he came to faith, but he had not yet developed his own personal spiritual voice. Instead, the language of the Church of God would provide the structure for his thoughts. So it had an influence, just as if you were reading a philosophy book. He came to love the Bible and rose to leadership position within his church, often leading Bible studies, preaching, and doing street evangelism. I like that part right there. Over the years, Sparky, as those of us who are close to Charles Schulz, his nickname, would mark nearly every page of his Bible with a pencil or pen, underlining meaningful passages, transcribing timelines, circling key words. Huh. So much so that he would naturally forget what had inspired him to do so for certain passages. He filled the margins with explanations drawn from his commentaries and scrawled out personal insights in the blank space. Huh. He later moved to California, where he joined a United Methodist church and became active as a Sunday school teacher. Well, so far so good. Turn page. Uh-oh. But sometimes things are not as simple as they seem. Charles Schulz married Joyce Halverson. No interest in religion. Refused to attend church with him. Ah, the joys of being unequally yoked. Perhaps more difficult, maybe, than being a single parent. I'm not sure which one is more challenging. I'm not sure. They're both mega hard. By their 20th anniversary, their marriage was in trouble and Schulz was engaged in an extramarital affair. Well, that would be called adultery, if we're going to quote the Bible. His marriage and adultery both ended, and he soon remarried to Janine Clyde. They remained married until death, but she had no interest in the Christian faith. Silly rabbit. Young person, learn from the creator of Snoopy. Do not get unequally yoked. You will feel the pain for the rest of your days unless he or she gets saved. By this time, Schulz was no longer attending church, lost much of his early enthusiasm for the Bible. The author speculates that within the tumult of a failing marriage and while in the midst of a private adultery, he no longer felt comfortable leading a study of the Bible. So he started to describe himself as a secular humanist. But it was more like a biblical humanism, which I don't think goes together just the same. He, before leaving, it was not a reversal of his faith, nor was it a signal of a personal religious crisis, but it was also a clear sign he did not hold to Orthodox Christian beliefs. Okay, that to me is, well, then he was a false convert. Over time, he came to hold to something closer to universalism. That's heresy. Believing there were others who were part of that kingdom without even knowing it, without believing in Jesus. You can't be a Christian and hold that belief. They were worshiping God through their hard attitudes and merciful action. This is the anonymous Christian view. Maybe they go through Jesus. They just don't know who he is, which contradicts, well, pretty much the entire Bible, specifically Romans chapter 10. How will they believe if a preacher doesn't go? And how will they go if nobody sends them? He died in perplexity and despair, grieving that he had not been given more years to live. How old was he when he left Minnesota? That's what I'd like to know. Because Minnesota, for some reason, decided he's one of ours. Even though I don't think he was famous until he went out to California. I think that was the order of events. Just the same, we do love Snoopy and Charles. Go to downtown St. Paul. And there are Charlie Brown statues all over downtown St. Paul, right outside of Candyland, by the way. Which you do not want to miss when you visit St. Paul. I think it's Snoopy, or there's a bunch of them right down there, not Mears Park, where the Park Avenue Theater or the Park Street Theater is. At any rate, it's right by Candyland, and you can see these different little statues of Charles Brown all over St. Paul. He moved when he was 7, but whatever, I understand. Speaking of movies,
dude, if they fly over us, we claim them.
Oh, I know it.
Yeah.
In fact. For St. Paul, it is so pathetic. St. Paul is so pathetic in trying to have celebrities. Oh, how pathetic is it? It's so pathetic that the timing of jokes has been thrown off. That's how pathetic actually is. If somebody actually has any, it doesn't even matter if they've been to the state of Minnesota. If it's a famous person who at any point has ever even read one of the epistles by Paul,
close enough.
They'll claim him as a native. That's pretty much all. See, St. Paul. He read St. Paul. We're called St. Paul.
Did you know Chris Pratt is not only a Christian, but was born in Virginia, Minnesota? He's one of us.
You mean the Chris Pratt who is doing the frisky scene with a woman he's not married to on celluloid for the whole world to see? That one. Yeah, right.
But he said something about God.
Mm-hmm. Christian Post reporting a new movie coming out called My All-American. Or is it out right now? That thing might be going on right now, if I'm not mistaken. It is a film with actor Aaron Eckhart. He was in Remember the Titans. It was Matthew McConaughey. He was really... Matthew McConaughey, by the way, claims to be a Christian. That's kind of cool. If you think that's important, which we talk about in a chapter in Judge Not Available Now at WretchedRadio.com. Matthew McConaughey, the movie where the plane crashed. We Are Marshall.
Yeah.
Aaron Eckhart was the assistant coach, I believe. And a fellow named Finn Wittrock, which sounds like it could be a Snoopy character.
I like that name already.
Finn Wittrock was the kid who took a shellacking in the Angelina Jolie pit. I noticed he hyphenated her name, which is okay because it's now Brad Pitt Jolie, so they both did it. No, actually, she just did it. Isn't that odd? At any rate, Finn Wittrock was the kid in the Angelina Jolie movie that she directed based on the story of the fellow whose name escapes me who got saved at the Billy Graham Crusade.
Oh, the World War II guy.
Yeah. Semperini. What? Semperini. Isn't that the motto of the...
No, that's Semper Fi.
I'm sorry. Finn Wittrock was the guy.
He got hit in the face. Flintstones?
By... It could have been.
Just thinking.
But then they'd have to call him Finn Wittrock Stone.
Yeah, true.
So they need to... Finn Wittrock Pebble. Finn Wittrock. The real-life person in the movie was a very committed Christian who attended church every day. Huh. How's about that? Writes the Christian Post. And I read that and I said, he's a Christian who attends church every day? Wait a second.
That'd make him Roman.
That's exactly what it would make him. That little detail left out of the Christian Post report. So I looked him up, and sure enough, Roman Catholic fellow, the football player. I'm sure it's a story that will make everybody feel good about their ability to overcome tragedies or something like that. But just note, Roman Catholic. He believed in the power of prayer, but according to those around him, he never pushed his faith on anyone. which means it wouldn't be evangelical for sure, because that's what we do. Finn Wittrock. So, or no, this is Aaron Eckhart. He was in Dark Knight, Olympus Has Fallen, and the We Are Marshall. Quote, I'm always looking for ways to be a better person. I have a long way to go in dealing with adversity. I don't know that I would deal with it as well as Freddie did. So it sounds like somebody needs to preach the gospel to Mr. Eckhart.
No,
Finn, by the way.
He's heard it because he went to church as a kid and went to Brigham Young.
Finn Witt? No, the Aaron Eckhart?
Eckhart.
Aaron.
He grew up Mormon.
Well,
so, no, he didn't
hear the gospel. That's exactly. See, he's trying to be a better person. That's what Mormonism will do for you, sort of. Not Christianity. Grace alone, faith alone, Jesus alone. And then you become increasingly an actual better person based on what has been done for you. There's a difference. Finn Wittrock, Stone, the guy, the runner guy, hit in the face by about 300 people in a camp. He was fine. Still triumphant. Held up the beam. Or whatever. He's not a Christian. Thought you should know. Hey, speaking of movies and Christians, talk about exciting. This would be your SW Times. A church, Fort Smith Church, brings Star Wars to congregation. Cool, man. The new Star Wars movie. When is that thing coming up? Probably around Christmas time.
December 18.
December. Yep. Good timing, that. So the pastor, we look at it as getting people who might not go to church interested in hearing what this is all about. So this would be your old bait and switch, using things of the world to get people who are not Christians to go to the place where Christians are supposed to gather in hopes that maybe they'll like Christians because they like Star Wars and we like Star Wars, and then they find out we like Jesus, so they'll like Jesus too, or something like that. There's a large battle going on in the world, and that's what Star Wars is all about. As if to infer that's what Christianity is all about. That is wrong. That is a dualistic understanding that is abiblical. There is not a cosmic battle happening. The devil is God's devil, and his leash is as long as God permits it. God is not waging war against the devil. This is not like, oh, I wonder who's going to win. I hope that it... No. Any negative thing that is being done is being permitted by God. It is not out of control. The pastor believes the Star Wars franchise carries concepts similar to the ones found within Christianity. That's right. Right there. Very similar.
You mean Buddhism? Straight up Buddhism?
No, I think he's just referring to some of the preachers out there who go a lot when they preach. I think that's the connection. Quote, there's the whole thing of having faith. There's the whole thing. Brilliant. There's the whole thing of having faith in something you can't see. Of course, Yoda has a lot of good messages, ideas, and stuff, said the pastor.
Wow.
The stage inside the church's worship center will include large lightsabers, while individuals dressed as stormtroopers, Chewbacca, and others will make appearances. Oh, man, I saw Chewbacca. Can I ask Jesus into my art? By the way, there's a chapter on this in Judge Not 2, available at wretchedradio.com. No surprise. Incorporating these Star Wars themes and elements is just another great way of reaching out to the community. Reaching out. Define that. It was really cool to have Chewbacca on the front row the other day, praying and being with us in our church. People are loving it. It's really a lot of fun to get to dress up. This is the pastor. It's really fun to get dressed up as a stormtrooper. Nice work, dignified sir. And see the reaction on the faces of kids and some adult fans.
Cosplay in the church? Good. Is that what they're telling us?
Yeah. It makes me feel good. And it creates a happy moment for a kid, for someone who is a Star Wars fan. It's rewarding and inspiring. Imagine what it must feel like if he'd actually preach the Bible. How he'd feel if he gets excited about this. And finally saying, some people are trying to get me to play a drum solo with the praise band while I'm dressed as a stormtrooper. That would be a lot of fun, but I don't know. No, the man has lines he's not going to cross. I might be able to pull that off while wearing the outfit. I know what that's going to turn into. Somebody's going to see, or he'll go up on the stage dressed up as a stormtrooper,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to go, you know, Somebody suggested I play the drums in this, but I don't think I could do that. Come on! Play the, no, really. Oh. Come on! Play,
okay.
Well, maybe if this side chants and then that side chants, maybe a... Come on! Come on! Come on! Come on! All right, fine, I'll do it. I was rehearsing a little something for you anyway. Uh-oh. Not the only church. Wisconsin Church hosts outreach event linking Christianity to Star Wars. Atheists, welcome. Uh-oh, Joey, it's a Presbyterian church.
Mm. Probably not really.
To explore what's common between Christianity and the film. So for most of the people who don't know the film, you've got to spend all your time explaining the film, basically doing eisegesis, or exegesis, I guess, on the film so you can explain the parallels to the Bible. That seems like a waste of time. Called Star Wars, Faith and the Force. God's not a force. Impersonal or otherwise, today's culture produces many challenges for children and families. Come and discover how Christianity and Star Wars share similar strategies in helping young people discover, connect, and abide in God and the Force. Beginning with a message called Raising a Jedi, Spiritual Formation and the Force, by a man who actually calls himself... Are you ready for this? Wait until you hear this. Yeah. He calls himself... A pastor.
Let me look that up.
Yeah. Pastor. This is Wretched Radio.
It's official. Yep, Christianity is now the official religion of haters and bigots. And that's why we produced a new DVD, Wretched Worldview, Persecution. Because Christians need to know how to respond to our new tolerant culture that is increasingly intolerant of Christians. Wretched Worldview, Persecution is available now at wretchedradio.com. Wretched. Amazing grace, amazing gospel.
After a soldier in the Egyptian army died mysteriously and suddenly, his parents were told he had taken his own life. Devastated by the news, they sought answers and eventually discovered something far more sinister. They are certain that their son was murdered for his outspoken faith in Christ.
Officially, their son's death was ruled a suicide, but autopsy reports showed the young man was shot twice in the heart. Christian soldiers in the Egyptian army have previously been killed for refusing to convert to Islam, one VOM worker said. The family strongly believes their son's Christian beliefs led to a murder that has been covered up by the Egyptian officials.
To learn how you can pray for and help persecuted Christians, subscribe to the Voice of the Martyrs free monthly newsletter. Call 875-VOICE. That's 875-VOICE. Support persecuted believers by calling 875-VOICE. The Voice of the Martyrs is a Christian nonprofit organization.
I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news, but children are little sinners. The great news is that the Bible has tons of information about dealing with sinful people, even those who are small and share your last name. Drive-By Parenting with Dr. Ted Tripp will transform the way you parent and change the tone of your entire home. Drive-By Parenting at wretchedradio.com. Remember, your purchase helps us reach more people with the amazing gospel.
It's time for a Drive-By Minute.
We're sent by Christ, and we're sent to a specific people. Within the DNA of the New Testament church is that idea that we are sent, that we are a people on mission, that we are missionaries within a local context, that missionaries are not just people we send way over there, but we are missionaries wherever God has placed us, that we are God's people in a specific location to fulfill the purpose God has given us. The church is not, the church is who we are, not just something we do. We gather as a church on Sundays, but we do that in order to scatter as the church the rest of the week and to be about the mission of making disciples. And the one who empowers us as we scatter, the one who showers us with gifts for God's mission, is none other than the Holy Spirit himself.
You can get Drive-By Pneumatology and all of our Drive-By resources at wretchedradio.com.
You can learn Biblical Greek. With Wretched Radio's It's Not Greek to Me, you will understand the language of the New Testament. It's Not Greek to Me is so simple, Todd Friel could teach it. Actually, Todd did. And you will learn to use Greek dictionaries and concordances, and you will understand all those Greek references from the sermon on Sunday. Get your copy of It's Not Greek to Me at wretchedradio.com. Remember, your purchase helps us reach more people with the amazing gospel.
Books of the Bible. The book of Isaiah is a collection of prophecies given to Isaiah. It can be divided in two parts. Isaiah delivered bad news to Israel and the surrounding nations concerning God's judgment, and he delivered good news of salvation for those who repent. Isaiah also offers detailed prophecies concerning the coming Messiah, who offers eternal salvation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
This is Wretched Radio, so you think maybe I'm being a little black helicoptery. You think maybe I'm exaggerating that people will line up to sue Christian institutions, universities, and churches. I don't think it's much of a stretch at all. For instance, this from churchlawandtax.com. What are the top five reasons that churches went to court in 2014? How do I know that there are statistics? Why do they even have statistics? Because it happens a lot, that they can even rank how often it happens. Number five, Affordable Care Act. 5.7% of the cases when people get sued, it's because of Obamacare. Isn't that nice? Number four, insurance coverage disputes. That's 6.6% of cases. Now this is debates over the kinds of coverage, disputes, intentional misconduct, etc. Number three, property disputes, 6.9% of cases. For instance, eminent domain. That's somebody suing the church to take over something there, the land, or the building, something from outside.
Or you've left the gospel, so we're leaving your denomination, and we'd like our building. Which lay claim to.
There is
those issues
too.
That's a great point, Joey. That's probably what that is more of. So mostly those are Presbyterian churches we're talking about.
And Episcopalian.
Like I said, Presbyterian churches, Joey. Presbyterian churches. Restrictive covenants, reverter clauses, whatever those are, religious discrimination in the rental or sale of property. Maybe even sexual discrimination, like they won't let us rent the gymnasium for our gay wedding reception, but they let the straight people do it. And adverse possession. Number two, non-sexual personal injury, 7.2% of cases. They get somebody gets hurt on the property. And finally, the number one reason for lawsuits at a whopping 11.7%, I hate this, sexual abuse of minors. Hate that. I hate that. I was listening to Megyn Kelly for a few moments last night. I was reading, and she was on in the background. I don't know if you heard, but there were a couple of breaking news alerts during the Megyn Kelly program. Yeah, and she was talking. She said something like, now remember, you have a greater chance of dying from lightning striking you than a terrorist attack. Fwa-boing! Coming up next. What should you do if a terrorist runs into your place of business? Well, what did you just... Was that a bakery? Because you want your cake and you want to eat it too. So she was trying to be... Let's be calm about this. Coming up next, increase ISIS attacks in Morocco. You've got to see this report. But don't be afraid, everybody. It was like coming right out of both sides of her mouth. And by the way, speaking of ISIL, ISIS... I read
Islamic State. It's just easier.
Yeah. No, I don't have any problem with that. Somebody wrote. I think it was maybe Joe Carter. 9 things you need to know about. One of those articles. Yeah, got it right here. I don't like this at all. Number 6 of the 9 things you should know about the Islamic State. Just in case you weren't persuaded, they're already wicked enough. The Islamic State enshrines a theology of rape that justifies the practice of sexual slavery. Islamic State publishes a glossy propaganda magazine called, I don't even want to say because who knows what it means. In October of the 2014 issue, it included an article entitled The Revival of Slavery Before the Hour, which explains the justification of sex slavery. The hour is the day of judgment, time of reckoning upon death or mankind, so judgment day, if you will. This article says the Islamic State asked its own Sharia scholars to render a verdict on whether the Yazidis, a religious minority group in Iraq, could be enslaved. Yep. Not a problem. Justified by the the Quran, their holy book, said yes. Number 7, Islamic State condones the rape of young girls. Last fall, Research and Fatwa Department of the Islamic State released a pamphlet on the topic of female captives and slaves. Question 13. Is it permissible to have intercourse with a female slave who has not reached puberty? Answer, it is permissible with the female slave if she is fit. However, if she is not fit, then it is enough to enjoy her without that act. It's a lovely group of people, and they use the Quran. Remember, to say that they're not Muslims is not accurate. They are Muslims. Now, whether they're right or not is irrelevant. Are they adhering to the Quran or not? Doesn't make any difference. They're holding on to it. And I noticed that we don't seem to make any distinctions like that when it comes to Christianity, just the same. They're Muslims. Number 8. Sorry. Islamic State's theology of rape also serves as a recruiting tool. Of course it would! As the New York Times has noted, the practice of slavery has become an established recruiting tool to lure men from deeply conservative Muslim societies, where casual intimacy is taboo and dating is verboten. Capturing sex slaves has become nearly as important for the Islamic State's objectives as capturing territory. Why? Because they find these young guys and they use it as a tool. Hey, join us. Guess what you get to do? Lovely. Absolutely lovely. Somebody just put out an article somewhere in my... Oh, here it is right here. Little test for you. Little quiz. This is great. I didn't know this. I researched this once. I did not know this. I didn't think Sirhan Sirhan was a Muslim. Was he? Okay, this is 1972, Encyclopedia Britannica said that Muhammad taught that the sun went into a mud puddle each night. Bobby Kennedy, here's a quiz for you. Was shot and killed by A, Superman, B, Jay Leno, C, Harry Potter, or D, a Muslim male extremist between the age of 17 and 40? In 1972, at the Munich Olympics, athletes were kidnapped and massacred by Olga Corbett, Sitting Bull, George Bush, or a Muslim male extremist between the age of 17 and 40. 1979, the U.S. Embassy in Iran was taken over by Lost Norwegians, Elvez, a tour bus of 80-year-old women, or a Muslim male extremist between the ages of 17 and 40. But that's not profile. During the 1980s, a number of Americans were kidnapped in Lebanon by A. John Dillinger, B. the King of Sweden, C. Boy Scouts, or D. a Muslim male extremist between the ages of 17 and 40. 1983, the U.S. Marine barracks in Beirut was blown up by a pizza delivery boy, B. Pee Wee Herman, C. Geraldo Rivera, or D. a Muslim male extremist between the ages of 17 and 40. Would you like me to continue? Because we could do this for about 28,000 instances. Why? Because there have been that many attacks just since September 11th. There was an article, I think, at HuffPost Post. I've got it somewhere in my stack, but it's buried way too deep at this point. It said the top 10 Christian terrorist acts. Ooh. Well, I'm interested. Guess where they reach to. That's right. The Crusades. Yeah.
All right.
And then also they use people like, what was the kid in the Oklahoma City? Timothy McVeigh. Yeah. Yeah, who basically quoted, "I am the captain of my soul." That's not Christian. He's not a Christian. Adolf Hitler. Yeah. And so they had to read, somebody who shot an abortion doctor. Okay. That's what they came up with. Since September 11th, 28,000 documented Islamic terrorist attacks, blowing people up, civilians, indiscriminately killing them. And we're terrorists. All right. Okay. All right.
Are you sure it wasn't satire trying to point out that if you want to claim if you want to claim ISIS as Islamic, then you have to claim these people as Christian because they're just as much.
Yeah. Well, you know what?
That's the only way that whole thing makes sense.
Unless, of course, you just don't have any semblance of history. It's constant. What did Whoopi Goldberg? Whoopi Goldberg just claimed that Adolf Hitler was a Christian.
Christian, yeah.
Come on. I mean, you know, at some point with some of this stuff, there was some debate. I know. I was watching Bill O'Reilly, and he was somebody said something to him in a letter, and you know, he gets pretty peevish, and he goes, you know, I don't even know what to say to these people. This is just boring. And I kind of feel that way sometimes. Really, Whoopi? Adolf Hitler was a... Really? Have you read any books ever about anything? This is just debating? Sorry, but I would rather just debate with my white Westie. It could be just a little bit more profound than dealing sometimes with these people who engage in these ridiculous comments. And uneducated, I mean, look, if there's an area that you're not educated in, just say so. No big deal. I know, like, less than a thimbleful in an ocean of knowledge. I know that. And that's true for all of us. Don't speak on things that you just don't have a clue about. And if you do, at least give it a little preamble. You certainly shouldn't be given a talk show on ABC. Southern Baptists kick out a church for affirming homosexuality. This is in Mississippi, man. A Baptist association in Hattiesburg dismissed one of its member churches for affirming the homosexual lifestyle. This is after the Pine Belt. Baptist Association discovered gaychurch.org listed University Baptist Church as an affirming church on its website. And so they said, sorry, you gotta go. They said, you've got it. You can change your position on this issue, or you're out. Oh, they let the time transpire. They're out. Now, I applaud that. I celebrate that. Quite honestly, I wish... Now, this is a... I don't know what denomination. Is this Southern Baptist? Whatever the Baptist Association is. Why don't we do this more often with theology? Why do we... The gay thing, gay! Get it out of here! Well, we'll rise up and we'll get, over that. But somebody, for instance, who might be a Baptist, who embraces, I don't know, say, Roman Catholicism and the new Pope who's, Popelicious. That man should be dealt with more intensely. Because that's a theological issue that is so, so corrosive. Now, got a question for you. You don't suppose... Oh, it is a Southern Baptist church. So I say good on them, but do you suppose that this church now could be open to a lawsuit when a church disciplines somebody for a sexual issue? You don't suppose maybe some attorney would be willing to? Be careful. Get ready. It is coming. Do the best you can as a church to tighten things up, make sure that your faith statement has all this stuff, but we just need to be prepared. This is without sounding doomsday-ish, it's collapsing around us. It seems pretty nifty. I went to Zaxby's today. My chicken sandwich was there. They didn't ask what religion I am. Besides, they even had Christian music on at the store. Wait till Dan Barker walks into a Zaxby's someday, probably on his way to sue somebody else, and he hears Christian music being played at Zaxby's. That's got to be a violation of the separation of chicken and state. And he'll sue them. They're just not going to stop on this, and they're going to use the courts. They don't have the people behind them, but they do have the courts behind them. And we need to be prepared, because it's not coming. It is here. Furthermore, might I suggest you get your kids ready for it? I just wish there was a brand new product available at wretchedradio.com. Hey, we've got persecution, which you could get at wretchedradio.com to see a theological, biblical response to what is almost certainly coming our way. Available now at wretchedradio.com. If you are involved in Sunday school, or you have homeschoolers, or you're just a Christian, would you please think about getting Life is Best, our brand new, thanks to you, 13-episode pro-life TV show to teach the saints how to defend life. It is gospel-saturated and profoundly helpful in a culture of death. Please consider getting a copy of Life is Best at wretchedradio.com.
This is John MacArthur with another edition of Portraits of Grace. In Exodus 33, Moses said to God, I pray thee, show me thy glory. And God said, I will make all my goodness pass before you, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord before you, and I will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and show compassion on whom I will show compassion. In effect, God was saying that his glory is the composite of his attributes. Now that suggests that we can glorify God by reflecting his attributes in our lives, attributes such as grace and compassion. When others see love and mercy and kindness and patience in us, they're catching a glimpse of God, and that brings him glory. This is John MacArthur, looking forward to bringing you more Portraits of Grace.
If pornography is a part of your life, it's time to be finally free. Heath Lambert and Todd Friel will take you through 8 biblical strategies that actually work. So if you're tired of going it alone, or if you've tried other ideas that just didn't pan out, Finally Free will help you be finally free. And isn't it time? Get your CD and be finally free at wretchedradio.com. Remember, your purchase helps us reach more people with the amazing gospel.
Now here's a clip from one of our favorite pastors here at Wretched Radio.
This is Steve Lawson.
Obedience. Boyce noted, without obedience, there is no real Christianity. Those who are genuinely Christ's sheep obey his call from the beginning and enter into a life characterized by obedience. It would be impossible to be a follower of Christ and not to obey Christ, for that is what it is to follow. So number one is obedience. And Jesus himself said, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven. How does the rest of the verse go? But he who does the will of my Father.
It's reasonable to prove the President of the United States lives in the White House by looking through the windows of the White House. Likewise, it's fair to look in the pages of Scripture to see if God inspired the Bible. Beyond the shadow of a doubt does exactly that. You will be convinced the Bible is supernatural. Your copy of Beyond the Shadow of a Doubt is waiting at wretchedradio.com. Remember, your purchase helps us reach more people with the amazing gospel.
Hermeneutics. A vital part of biblical hermeneutics is an understanding of genre. One genre we find in Scripture is narrative. Narratives tell us of real events with real people in real places at a real time. Not everything we read in narratives is condoned by God, but everything we read is part of God working out his plan for the world. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Could be wrong about this, but that would be absolutely nothing new. This is Wretched Radio. Was sitting in a chair, which I hate to confess might need replacing soon. I sit in that chair a lot and read, and it's kind of getting a little... I think the springs have sprung. They kind of gave up the ghost on me. At any rate, I'm sitting there reading a stack of stuff, as I tend to do at night, and in the background is a TV show, probably Fox News, because I'm born again. And that's the network of record for evangelical Christians. And they were showing on one of these shows, undoubtedly a breaking news alert, that there was an individual, there was some town hall meeting, and there were it was about some Muslims in a mosque, and there were some people that were opposing it. And this guy was yelling, you're all in a cult, you're all terrorists. You're all terrorists. We don't want your mosque here. You can't fool us. You're all terrorists. Should we be saying that? Can we say that accurately? I'm trying to get this increasingly refined because I think that it might be helpful in this dialogue that we are continuing to have about Islam. Separating the difference between political and religious, I think, is important. Talking about Islam in the political realm sometimes gets confused if we bring in theology and kind of mingle them together. I think we would do well as best we can to separate them. And here's what I see. He's putting this through a political filter, trying to keep theology out of it for a moment. Just for a moment. Because I'm always more interested in the theological than political. But when asked about these scenarios, what do we say? How do we process this? This might or might not be helpful. There are people who claim to be Muslims who are undoubtedly terroristic. Whether you want to call them Islamic terrorists or not, I frankly don't care. But that group of people, those people, our government needs to deal with because that is their job. Romans 13, we call on our government to protect us from wicked people. How far and wide that reaches, that's a debatable issue. But we can make the statement, those terrorists need to be dealt with by the sword from the government. Now, the people who claim to be peaceful, we've got no issue with. Now you say, what about Takiya? They can lie. I know that. But until it's discovered that they are lying and actually are a terrorist, you treat them as a non-terrorist. Think back to Japan in World War II. And by the way, I always find it rather interesting that all of the liberal websites, they like to use World War II internment camps as this quite ridiculous thing of these morons from 70, 80 years ago. Oh, can you look at how ridiculous it is that they wanted to put Germans and Japanese people into internment camp? It's not ridiculous when you're living inside of it. And I think Matt Walsh's headline captured it. Don't let anybody make you feel like you're a bad Christian if you're concerned about Syrian refugees. Of course we're compassionate. Who's more compassionate than Christians? Nobody. But it doesn't mean we're knuckleheads. Not fools either. So back then, they had to take a look at Japanese people. And how did they categorize them? Well, if they were Japanese, that was their nationality. Here's my question for you. If you were living right now in 1942, and you're in America, would you want every single Japanese person put into an internment camp? I think you would say, I don't think so. But you could understand, the concern would be, well, they might have sympathies toward Japan. You're right, they might. But until they do and they express that, or they are even, and even if, by the way, they are starting to say, you know, I increasingly sympathize with that, until they start acting on that, I don't know that there's much a government can do. If they start to subvert this form of government, that's doing something, even if it's just through language. But if they adhere to weird, scary beliefs, that's not a crime. So I think, back in World War II days, we would not have said every Japanese person in America should be put into a camp or put under surveillance. But it's reasonable to say if they were trying to subvert the country and trying to be an insider, get information out, whatever it was, work as a spy, well, then yes, of course we should deal with them if we're in a time of war. But you wouldn't make a blanket statement that all Japanese are fighting against us. No, just those who are fighting against us. And I think that applies to Islam. Those who identify with ISIS, with the Muslim Brotherhood, whatever is the latest manifestation of the terror wing of Islam, they're at war with us and our government. We need to say, go get them, government. But if the people, if that big middle group, which I think exists, that would say, well, no, we don't want to do those things. Or even if they say, well, we lean toward those things, until they start joining them, you leave them be. Now, if they start doing that, well, then they suddenly get put into that camp that you go to war against. Until then, they can hold wonky beliefs, but until they start siding with, don't we have to leave them alone? Governmentally! Now, the question about when push comes to shove, I think is an important question. What will happen when push comes to shove? In other words, they have to side either with the American Constitution or with the Sharia law of Islam. Well, if they decide to side with Sharia law and they start to act on that, because you can have people in this country who don't like the Constitution, when they start acting on that, well, then they've joined the terror side. They've joined the warring side. But until then, they haven't. I think that's the way we need to look at it. I think. Theologically, different issue. Theologically, let's debate that issue as a theology, which one is right, but let's try to keep it separate as we talk to the government about the issue. And the reason that I bring this up, and this is the second day that I've done so, right now you hear Hillary Clinton again, we are not at war against Islam, it is a peaceful religion. That statement isn't correct. And if we just go, no, it's not a peaceful religion, well, that isn't, it's not as precise as it needs to be. Precision in language never has negative consequences. And I think the same thing is true. We should say to Hillary, we'll trust that there are some peaceful Muslims. That's fine. But what are we going to do about the terroristic Muslims? Would you agree that there are Muslims who are terroristic? And she, you know what she'll say? Well, that's not what the religion is. I'm not having a theological debate with you, Hillary. Or as somebody who I live with and sleep with every night would say, shrillery. This isn't a theological conversation. Those people who call themselves Muslims, we're going to trust. Are you saying that they're wrong? They call themselves Muslims. They're acting like terrorists. Deal with them already. Where do you get to work on that, please? I just read an article from Ben Shapiro, editor at Breitbart, and he tried to explain why it is that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have more sensitivities toward Islam. And he tried to explain it through a Marxist worldview. You'll hear Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders make claims like, if it weren't for poverty, these people wouldn't be terrorists. But because you see, they are in poverty, they struggle, they get upset, they get angry, so they go to war. And you and I go, that's nonsense. Ben Shapiro may have a point. He said, who is it that people like Shrillery and Barack Obama believe caused the poverty? Who do they think caused the poverty? Guess who? White Christian males. In other words, Christians have caused the poverty. That is why they're more sympathetic to Islam, said Shapiro, than they are to Christians. They both, by the way, claim to be Christians, but they're more sympathetic to Muslims because the Christians, as a rule, have treated the Muslims poorly, therefore, the bad behavior of the Muslims was caused by the Christians, so we don't want to be too harsh on them. That's his explanation. And then at the very end of the article, he asked the question, that's the only thing I can think of. Can you think of a better reason? I said, well, to myself, self? Yeah, I think so. It's light and darkness. Don't forget, it is always light and darkness. And so they side with the people that they're actually on. They side with the people that they're actually on. They don't side with women if they're the... Gloria Steinem does not side with somebody of, let's just call it, conservative values, whether professing Christian or not, because that's not her side. Darkness is opposed to any semblance of light, let alone the light. And so Hillary is not on the side of light. Barack Obama is not on the side of light. So they go to war against the very group that they claim to be a part of. That's my explanation for it. I can't think of anything else that would explain why we are seeing the nonsense that we are seeing these days. If you disagree, I understand. Send an email to idea@wretchedradio.com, idea@wretchedradio.com, and you can disagree. Give me your explanation, or better explain to me the situation with Islam. That's as best I can still it down. Tony, am I off the mark on this?
Why did Probably. I ask
that? Why did I bother to ask that? I am very, very sorry.
You missed the elephant in the room.
Which
climate
is?
Change.
That's another one. And who causes climate change? Well, in the mind of Bernie Sanders, America. Even though we're not nearly as big a polluting agent as China. And by the way, speaking of China, somebody just sent me an article. This is something worth praying for. I hope that you pray for our brothers and sisters who are overseas. This is from a web. That's Ben Carson.
It's from a website. Okay, we've got to narrow down.
Ben Carson said he didn't agree with the policy decision to vote against ordaining women. Quote, I don't see any reason why women can't be ordained.
There you are.
That's not the article I was looking for. However, it was saying that they're going to be having a meeting this week, apparently, in China. The government is getting together, one of those little private meetings, to determine how they're going to deal with these Christians. And it's just, it would appear to some that it's just another attempt to kind of tighten it up, lock it down. Because there are 87 million communists there, at least card-carrying members. They believe now that Christianity is outpacing it. And so the communists are now taking a look again at just how can we tighten up the screws. Not to obliterate it. They don't think that they can do that. There's too many. But they can try to make it very difficult for them. Pray for our brothers and sisters. In Islam, when you are an extremist, you kill people. Now, I don't even know that I like to call it an extremist, but we'll work with their language for the moment. I think that they are just rightly adhering to the tenets of the faith. Tim Challies, our Canadian friend, who, by the way, he connected that guy. He's getting that one fellow connected to a church, and they're talking back and forth. That Challies. Just because he's not a hugger, the Tim Challies, but that doesn't mean he doesn't have a warm heart, kind of, in there someplace. A call for Christian extremists. Consider now what we have been seeing with Islam, what they're doing, who they're terrorizing. Going on right now, Muslims are terrorizing people in multiple places. Right now, it's going on. Guaranteed, right now. Christians are called to be extremists also, don't you know? There's just a little difference. Yeah, Paul's little letter to Titus, Jesus, who gave himself up for us to redeem us from all lawlessness and to purify for himself a people for his own possession who are zealous for good works. That's what it means to be a Christian extremist. You do good works. Allah glorified by maimed bodies, blood running in the streets, complete mayhem and chaos. God is glorified in acts of love and deeds of kindness. And by the way, the next time I hear somebody say, they shouted, Allahu Akbar, God is great. No. Allah is great. Because there's a difference. Jesus, let your light shine before others so they may see your good works, glorify your Father. Peter said, keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable so they may speak. They speak against you as evildoers, but they see your good deeds and glorify your Father. Why? Because that's what Christianity is about. Paul, we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. Is there a difference between these two religious systems? Yeah. Terror, mayhem, and death. Good works, kindness, and life. Until next time, go serve your King.